T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
We can't start winning until we stop losing. And right now we are doing things to beat ourselves with the turnovers and sacks and safeties and, you know, penalties on third downs on defense. And so, I'm just not going to deal with it anymore.
Wow. That was Coach Zimmer. Good afternoon, everybody. Happy Monday. Hey, Jor.
Hi, how are you? But he's right. You can't stop winning until you start losing. Sometimes the simplest statements are the ones that hit home.
Wait, you can't start winning until you stop losing. Mm-hmm. That should be the motto for our show, right? Every day we should just start with that.
And you also have to stop being your own worst enemy, you know, making the same mistakes you've been making before, not believing that things can get better. I mean, there's a lot of life lessons in that statement. You can really break that down.
Well, these are dystopian times to be a Vikings fan, and I think I share the sentiment of many others. Why can't we have nice things? People who cheer for the Vikes. Now, granted, it's not a catastrophe yet, but 0-2 start. With us, joining us to try to put some things into perspective, the Vikings lost to the Colts yesterday 28-11, another fairly ugly game. With us to perform the autopsy is Eric Nelson. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hey, Paul. Hey, Jordana. Yeah, the cause of death, many things. Basically, blunt force by the Indianapolis Colts offensive line and their defense. Indy played very well. As we all know, Minnesota didn't show up. And here's some numbers for you. And I think it's important to note, we're only two games in. They're going to play 16. It's a small sample size. But right. Since 1990, only 15% of teams who have started 0-2 make the playoffs. And since 2002, that drops to 11%. So the Vikings are going to be swimming upstream like salmon here the rest of the year. They can't have any more hiccups, if you will. And they have a tough game Sunday against Tennessee, who's 2-0.
Eric, the Vikings haven't started a season 0-2 since 2013, back when Leslie Frazier was in the final year as head coach. If you were coach today, what would you do? I know that that's maybe an ambush of a question, but what needs to be done?
I would look at the opening drive of the game against Green Bay when Minnesota scored a touchdown, and the opening drive yesterday when they went down and got three and took a brief lead that didn't last long down there in Indiana. But I would try to replicate what you're doing to open up the game, because after that, Minnesota seems to go into some sort of a shell. You've got to keep the ball away from the other team. The Vikings used to have this vaunted elite defense, and that's no longer the case. They lost six starters. And I said this in the offseason. I can't imagine that they're going to be as good as they were a year ago when you lose the likes of, you know, Leslie or Xavier Rhodes and Everson Griffin. Danielle Hunter's injured. He's their star defensive end. There's been so much attrition. Mackenzie Alexander, you've got a lot of new faces in the secondary. You can run on the Vikings up the gut. Daniel Pierce is a guy they signed in the offseason from Baltimore, and he opted out because of COVID-19. So they're weak up the gut. They're weak on the corners. They have great safeties in Harrison Smith and Anthony Harris, but teams can exploit that. And the first 2 weeks, guys like Aaron Rodgers and Phillip Rivers, two quarterbacks who more than likely will be in the Hall of Fame, you know, they have gutted that Viking defense. And Jonathan Taylor, the former Badger, yesterday ran wild as well.
Other than that, it's going well, though, I have to admit. is this just, and I feel bad for Kirk Cousins. I saw some of the comments on social media. I know you have to become numb to that stuff and ignore the haters and the trolls. And we are not haters and trolls. We know the Vikings will come back. It's disappointing, but we need to keep things in context. I heard one conspiracy theory that this is all a ploy so that come the NFL draft next spring, maybe the Vikes can pick up Trevor Lawrence from Clemson, who seems to be the latest shiny object. What do you think? Can we get this done with Kirk Cousins?
You know, I think without an elite offensive line, what you see is what you get. Stephon Diggs is gone, and no matter what you thought of Stephon Diggs, yesterday he had 8 catches for 153 yards and a touchdown for Buffalo. They won. They're 2-0. Diggs had more yards receiving than the entire Vikings wideout unit yesterday, so they miss him. The young rookie Justin Jefferson has not been able to step up yet. Maybe that'll happen. Again, he's only played 2 games out of LSU. I think what we see is probably what we're going to get most of the year. If you watched the game last night on NBC with New England and Seattle, and you saw Cam Newton and you saw Russell Wilson, those guys play a different kind of game than Kirk Cousins. And there's a reason those guys are superstars, and Kirk Cousins is looked at as a good quarterback but not an elite quarterback. And until the Vikings get in that position, I can't imagine this thing getting a whole lot better. They'll probably find a way to win some games, but this could be a bleak season.
Oh, Eric boy. Nelson, yeah, not great news, and sorry to bring you on to, you know, do the postmortem, but we appreciate the insight, and hopefully you'll come back with better news in the following weeks.
Thanks, Eric.
Well, like I said, Paul and Jordana, Tennessee comes in. They're 2-0. They reached the AFC Championship game last season, so this will be another struggle, but if the Vikings can beat the Titans, then all will be well for a week.
A whole week. Okay. Thanks, Eric.
Among other big losses this weekend, we lost Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And women, if you have a credit card in your name, your own credit history, if you've leased an apartment or bought property in your name, if you've consented to your own medical treatment, if you played a sport in high school, you can thank RBG. We will talk more about her life with a reporter who's covering her obituary and her lying in state at the Capitol. That and much more next. Welcome back. It's 3:20. Today has been declared Ruth Bader Ginsburg Day in Minneapolis and St. Paul. The mayors of both Twin Cities have declared that to be the fact in both cities, in memory, of course, of the notorious RBG, the Supreme Court Justice who died last week. She died Friday from pancreatic cancer at age 87. And what a loss. What a loss personally for us. My kids and I sat down and watched the movie based on her life on the basis of sex. We looked at the examples of how our lives are better as women because Ruth Bader Ginsburg was in the world and always fighting for equality and justice for not only women, but for LGBTQ community, but for those that are disabled, for anybody that was disenfranchised or persecuted on the basis of gender or preference or anything that wasn't given to a white man, which the rules were written for during her time. Joining us now is CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum to talk more about RBG's life and her legacy. Thane, so happy to have you on the show.
Thank you, Jordana. What you just said was so lovely, really wonderful. I'm so appreciated hearing that. Thank you.
Well, I think that we don't realize the effect this tiny little powerful woman had on our life. Like, I can get a credit card in my name because of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Like, in her lifetime, she couldn't do that. And I think we forget that. And sometimes, you know, I have 2 girls. I sometimes think that I don't want them to take that for granted because they should know how far we've had to come and how hard we've had to fight. And Ruth did that for us, for equal rights. So, Thane, this isn't about me or my girls, but tell us what you have been doing today to cover her life, her legacy, and how CBS News is covering this.
But Jordana, you know, it is about you and your girls. It is very much about, and I think you're right. The movie that your girls and you watched, you know, covered a lot of her legend that started even before she became a federal appeals court judge in Washington, in the D.C. Circuit. You know, she was the founder of the Women's Rights Project with the ACLU. She argued all the seminal cases that dealt with equal protection for women and to extend the very same 14th Amendment rights and civil rights on the basis of sex, not to have any discrimination on the basis of sex. And you're quite right. It involves not just gender, but also sexual preference and orientation. And so, yes, when she, you know, finally, when by the time she had become a federal judge, even before she had come to the Supreme Court, she was sort of a legend, as most Americans didn't realize it at the time. Mm-hmm. And yes, while she was on the court, the VMI case, the Virginia Military Institute case, was a very good example of a Supreme Court justice who fought for women's rights and equal protection, finally getting a real opportunity on the bench itself to be part of an oral argument as a justice on the Supreme Court, not on the other side, but as a justice on the Supreme Court. That was a crucial decision that extended those protections to women. Going back to your original, I've been on the phone, you know, I've been on networks, CBS, local affiliates all day. Frankly, Jordana, all weekend. I filed two obituaries 2 years ago. That's how these things are done. I have written for CBS News obituaries for all the Supreme Court justices. They're already there. But 10 minutes after the news wires reported that Justice Ginsburg had died, I received a call from CBS to say, we need more. And I said, what do you mean? You have two. And they said, no, you don't understand. This is such a big news story that all of those have already heard those, and they need to hear more from you. And that, Jordana, sums up what made her very different from all the other Supreme Court justices. She became almost a rock star cult-like figure for a Supreme Court justice who normally people don't know what they look like. They never hear them speak. She's with feature film was based on her life, which you and your daughter saw. She was part of a widely seen CNN documentary. So, yes, the last several days have been about this loss on the Supreme Court and how to fill it.
Yeah, Thane, this is Paul. Her nickname was Notorious, RBG, yes. which I love. Hey, I'm just curious. The New York Times Washington correspondent said her death marked the loss of an elder stateswoman of feminism, a powerhouse octogenarian who had become an unlikely icon to women of all ages, especially the millennial set, which, again, kind of surprised me. For many women and many girls, it was a deeply personal loss. RBG was cut from a different cloth. As you just described, Thane, she stood up for equality, spoke truth to power. But when I think RBG, when I think about her legacy, it comes down to bravery. I mean, she was courageous. Nobody pushed her around. Why does she stand out when so many justices, chief justices, don't? I mean, what really set her apart?
Well, remember, her career could be compared in some ways to Thurgood Marshall, who, by the way, she was so respectful of him, she refused to accept that was the truth. She said, look, you know, this man was part of, you know, a movement where his head was getting beat in. Nothing like that ever happened to me. But that was another example of her modesty. And it's not surprising that there's that Chadwick Boseman film called Marshall that's also out on cable. Everybody seems to be watching it, both the film that Jordana and her daughter saw and the film about Marshall, because they're very similar. Both of them, one was an African-American lawyer, one was a woman lawyer who could receive no job offers on Wall Street when she graduated at the top of her class at Columbia Law School. Having been at the top of her class at Harvard Law School, she could get not one Wall Street law firm to give her a job. So she, you know, I would think that when situations are like this, where Supreme Court justices are, as you would say, cut from a cloth, that catapulted them to that position because they fought for rights that were previously denied to certain Americans, when they finally make it to the Supreme Court, you can see how that is very different from, you know, the conventional, you know, white male who, you know, went to Harvard, Yale, and, you know, just that we've seen that before. That is very common. But I think what made her different, and by the way, I have a feeling, you know, she's still very young, but something similar will happen with Sonia Sotomayor, a woman who was born in a housing project in New York, in the Bronx, Puerto Rican descent, first-generation American, you know, very similar. Because these stories, I think, become also American stories, not just stories about people who really did well in law school, but people because of personal biography, the fact that they're on the Supreme Court makes us all feel safer. It makes our democracy seem more robust and alive. Because if a democracy should work, they should be on the Supreme Court. So I think that this thinking about Marshall and Ginsburg, both on the Supreme Court, I think it's a really great statement about how the Supreme, you know, when Supreme Court appointments work properly and correctly, those are two good ones. And that's why both of them also became news stories in addition to stories about the Supreme Court.
Thane, we probably only have a minute left, but after the two obits, and of course talking about this all week, did you learn a little nugget that folks like me who have tried to consume everything I could about RBG this weekend didn't know? Is there maybe a little known fact that you can leave us with that's not top of the news cycle?
I do think, Jordana, I'm sorry, did you finish?
Yes, please, yes.
Yeah, okay, mm-hmm. Sorry. Yeah, I think, and I mentioned this in one of the obits, and it isn't unknown. But her relationship with Scalia, almost every day we're learning how more intense it was. And we're living in this polarized time of just utter political rancor, where the people, you know, the political leaders, people of different ideological viewpoints, literally despise each other. And they say it publicly, right, that they're simply unwilling to listen to the other side. And you're talking about two Supreme Court justices who even knew each other on the federal appeals bench, who agreed on nothing when it came to the Constitution, literally nothing. And yet they were best friends. They celebrated New Year's Eve every night, every year. They took trips around the world together with their spouses. They had intimate dinners. They attended the opera. And I think we should be reminded of that, because what we're seeing is such levels of hatefulness and hostility in the public sphere. So that, you know, it's not a very good message for your daughters, frankly, mm-hmm. that this is what mm-hmm. it means to have a public life. This is what it means to be involved in public service. And I think Scalia and Ginsburg, you know, two ethnic, you know, Americans from New York who agreed on nothing, demonstrated mutual respect when it came to the Constitution.
So beautiful. Well, thank you.
That is good to hear. Thank you for that story, and we appreciate your perspective on this extraordinary woman. Thane Rosenbaum, legal analyst for CBS News, thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you both.
You bet.
When we get back, a meditative moment, and we'll play Is It Fake News? Next.
WCCO.
Time to breathe. But this breathing is going to energize you. It's going to help your focus. It's going to oxygenate your blood and your muscles. It'll increase your heart rate in a good way, your respiratory rate, your metabolic rate, and get your blood glucose on concentration. I know breathing can really do all of this. You don't need a run around the lake to do this. This one is called Breath of Fire. Yogis do this, but also this is great for concentration. So your kids are back in online school, or maybe back at school, or you're back at your desk after the weekend. Breath of Fire. It is rapid inhales and rapid exhales, only through your nose. So get comfortable, get in a good spot, sit up, because this is for stimulation, and we are going to practice Breath of Fire. Be comfortable. Rapid inhale, rapid exhale through your nose. Do five and take a breath. I don't want you to get a head rush on this one. Again, Breath of Fire, rapid inhale and exhale. This is great for focus and concentration and will oxygenate the blood. Here we go. You should use the same force that you're breathing out, that you're breathing in. Breath of Fire. Do it anytime you need to refocus. Enjoy.
Thank you, Jor. I needed that. We all needed that. So now you get to use your critical thinking skills and figure out if what I'm about to tell you is true or false. Here we go.
Okay.
Did you hear about the Freedom to Drive in the Dark Committee?
Uh-oh.
FDDD. Freedom to Drive in the Dark Committee. They have a website, and they explain why all of us have the freedom to drive at night without headlights. And they explain, number one,
oh my God,
we are not sheep. Number two, we refuse to live in fear. Okay. Number three, we can see just fine. Number four, we respect your choice to use your lights, so respect our choice not to. Number five, if other drivers cannot see us, that is their problem. Next, it might be a law, but it's unjust and it infringes on our constitutional rights. Number seven, we have medical exemptions. You are not allowed to ask about that. And number eight, we are members of the Freedom to Drive in the Dark Committee. It's one of our freedoms, and if need be, we will be imprisoned for our beliefs.
No, it's false. You made it up. That is, people are stupid now, but they're not that stupid. That's, I mean, somebody would crash into them. No, no, this can't be real. This can't. I'll never drive again.
You are,
no. No,
you are correct.
Absolutely not.
And just the fact that there was debate, is that real? No, that can't be real. No, somebody
okay,
sent
so
me
I'm
a
right.
meme. You are right.
It's not real.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry.
David, I'm
winning
sorry,
that. Dave.
Yeah, there you go.
I was confused, DJ. Yeah, I found
can't
this on social media.
No.
And of course, it's an expose on the anti-masker sentiment because they use many of the same logic points, the same talking points. So you
it's
are
pretty
correct.
Hilarious.
That is made up. Please use your headlights when you drive at night.
Please.
To protect yourself
Please.
And others.
Yes. Is this true? I'm a huge fan of The Rock. That's definitely true. I'm not at the story yet. You know Dwayne Johnson. You know The Rock, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. So on Friday, he shared a photo of his front gate ripped off the hinges and laying on the grass next to the entryway to his house. On the post, he wrote this: "Not my finest hour, but a man's got to go to work." He says, "We experienced a power outage due to the severe storms, causing my front gate not to open. I tried to override the hydraulics, but the gates wouldn't open. So he ripped them off the hinges with his bare hands and then just threw them on the grass and drove out to go to work." True or not?
I would say... Well, it's The Rock. I don't think there's anything he can't do. I would say that's true.
100%. 100%. He then wrote, "My security team was met with the gate technician and the welders an hour later. They were apparently in disbelief and equally scared." I would be scared. It's like he
wow.
turned into the Hulk.
Yeah. Very in character. Yeah, you don't mess
so
with The
great.
Rock.
And man's got to work, right? Got to put food on the table.
I just wish there was video of that, right? That would go
viral.
Yeah,
no, well, there's a photo. There's just a photo that, like, literally the entire gate ripped from the brick. It's pretty good.
He should be wearing a cape.
He's strong.
Jor, mm-hmm. Look, we've all been, well, many of us have been stuck in Zoom calls, which seem to go on and on forever. The world's longest Zoom call just became a record, 23 hours and 39 minutes. A couple of radio co-hosts in Auckland, New Zealand, they wanted to get a full 24 hours, but the Zoom call crapped out just before that mark. So they got up to 23 hours and 39 minutes, still a world record for a Zoom call. They called everybody from celebrities to comedians, actors, sports stars, everyday Kiwis to join the call. And they set a new record, and they're very proud of that fact in Auckland, New Zealand. True or false?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go with that's 100% true. Yeah, that sounds like something like disc jockeys would do.
You're absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm.
What a gig, right? One day on a Zoom call.
That's pretty fun, right? That's pretty fun.
Yes.
I mean, I think that's great. So the kids told me about this one. I'll be very brief. Over the weekend, TikTok got a stay of execution. Remember, it's that Chinese
right.
video, and they make videos. It's to, on my end, harmless. But you're right. I guess if the Chinese are scraping the data from my 13-year-old, I don't know what data she has online, but whatever. I guess we don't like that. So President Trump planned to or threatened to ban them because of national security concerns. Well, Oracle and Walmart kind of tag teamed and came in with a Hail Mary for the Gen Xers and for TikTok. Just hours before yesterday's deadline, both companies say they'll own a combined 20% of the stake in TikTok Global, which will be headquartered in the U.S. Now, the deal still needs to be approved by the Treasury Department, but Trump gave his blessing. The administration gave his blessing on the deal. And to seal it, President Trump appeared with TikTok's most famous dancer. Her name is Charli D'Amelio. I don't know. I know you don't know who she is, but I do.
No.
And they did the app's popular Renegade dance together.
Wait, the president did a dance?
On TikTok with its most famous influencer, no. Charli D'Amelio. The dance is called Renegade.
I was with you with Walmart and Oracle, but no, he did not do the dance. No, I that would not be very presidential.
I could totally see him doing it, though.
Nice
There's
try.
Some twerking involved.
Oh, please.
No, the rest is true. TikTok got a stay of execution, but the president did not do a dance on TikTok.
You know who else got a stay of execution? High school Who's football that? And volleyball. Yeah. Sloan Martin explains next.
351, Jordana and Paul, thank you for spending some time with us today. We will talk much more about COVID and the CDC reversal with an infectious disease expert coming up at 5:33. Dr. Caitlin Eccles-Radke will join us from Hennepin Healthcare. But there is a COVID sports related story we want to talk about first. Our own Sloan Martin is in the CCO newsroom. And Sloan, you are our Lynx expert. And the Lynx postponed a playoff game due to COVID concerns. So, Sloan, what's the backstory here?
Well, that is exactly right. This was supposed to be game one of their semifinal matchup. They're one of the final four teams left in the WNBA shortened season that is happening down in Bradenton, Florida. So just a couple games away from reaching the WNBA finals for the first time since 2017. And that game was postponed. And I think by a lot of people's observations, the WNBA has done a really solid job of keeping people safe in their bubble. So this was kind of out of an abundance of caution, especially going into a best of five series. There were a couple of inconclusive tests over on their opponent's side, the Seattle Storm. So they decided to postpone it. They're going to be retested again, need to get those conclusive, first of all, and negative, second of all. And right now, preliminarily, game one of their semifinal series set to happen on Tuesday. So a bump in the road, but the first time we've kind of seen this happen in this league this season.
Sloan, speaking of COVID-19, my understanding is that hospitalizations are down, which obviously is a good thing, but case numbers are going up. We still have this plateau in case numbers. I know you were sitting in today on the Minnesota Department of Health meeting. Can you talk a little bit about testing and how that played into the decision to bring back high school football and volleyball?
Well, testing is certainly a part of it. There's a lot that goes into these decisions. This was entirely the MSHSL. So this was not the Minnesota Department of Health that was kind of steering this decision. This was the board of this organization. We know that just yesterday we reported a new one-day record with 1,318 positive tests. But you're right, the hospitalizations seem to go down, and they're steady right now 128 people in the ICU, and that has to do with the different parts of the population that are getting infected, better treatments in terms of oxygenating patients and being able to handle that increase in the ICU, more people COVID patients for a couple of months now as opposed to the general population. But in terms of the MSHSL decision, it's similar to the Big Ten in which they're reversing course, where the even had a doctor come on. And of course, like we all are, worried about what are the long-term effects, especially on other organs like the heart or the kidneys or the lungs, for example, that we're seeing in other sports. We saw several Big Ten universities release their own studies about high rates relative to the general population of myocarditis, the inflammation of the heart. So there was a discussion about that, but it goes back to just still how little we know about the virus, what we don't know, what's happening at the high school level. We do know that outdoors is going to be better than indoors. We do know there will be no spectators for indoor sports like volleyball. That winter sports is going to be coming up kind of on the discussion block as of October 1st. So those were all things that mixed together, the fact that there is this inconclusive evidence. But we also heard from MDH today, where it's all about balancing this, the kids, the community desires, the how important youth sports is with these risks. And we also found out today, too, that at schools, there's 351 in Minnesota that have been impacted by COVID-19 with at least one case. Okay. So a lot to balance here. But of course, that reversal definitely does parallel what we saw in the Big Ten.
Sloan Martin, a pleasure, and thank you for the education and dropping some knowledge on us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sloan. Oh, my.
It's tough. I get it, because the kids want to be playing sports and they want to be out and about. And it's a really hard decision. It really is. It is.
A few more weeks left to get stuff done outdoors. I know what's at the top of my list. Jor, DJ, they have a separate list. What's on your list? That's coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.